Blog Talk Radio.
If it's smooth jazz, then the Jazz Queen is talking about it on Talking Smooth Jazz. Your place for all things smooth. Artist
Nicholas Cole. Vincent Ngala. Jonathan Fritzen.
And news with the smoothest show on the internet radio, your host, the Jazz Queen.
And Mastermind Entertainment's president, Mike Reynolds. Mike, how are you?
Doing okay tonight, sir. Doing okay tonight. How's it going up there in Vegas with all that good weather?
It's actually, you know, it was almost 80 degrees today, so it's starting to warm up. I am not looking forward to triple-digit weather. I'm just not.
Oh, wow.
Just not. Let me welcome to the chat room Cheryl B., Jazzy J., and Catherine Gilran. Welcome to the show, ladies. If you would like to join us in the chat room, please go to TalkingSmoothJazz.com. And click on the Talking Smooth Jazz Radio show page, and that will bring you into the chat room. The phone number is 646-716-5485, 646-716-5485. Our guest this evening is saxophonist Marion Meadows, but he is more than just a musician. He is a semi-pro cyclist, photographer, and digital designer, and at one point wanted to be a veterinarian. Marion's new CD is called Whisper, and it is his 13th release and his label debut on Shineke Entertainment. Marion Meadows, welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Well, thanks, Eric. It's good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you. Good to have you. I'm very happy to have you. Meet my co-host, Mike Reynolds.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's it going today?
Very well. Thanks.
So I was telling Marion before he came on about how impressed I am of him after doing my research on him and finding all of these different, I told him, layers of Marion Meadows, what he does, because like I said, he's more than just a musician. I mean, he does all of these other things. And at first, immediately want to ask you guys to go to his website, marionmeadows.com, which, by the way, he did himself, and it's a very nice one, Marion. Really nice.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. That's just out of a need, to get some things done we need to have them done.
it's really, really nice. Go to his website, marionmeadows.com, click on the link button, and then scroll all the way down to the bottom. And then beneath that, there's three other links. One is Marion Meadows Atmosphere Fantasy, his designs, and his photography. You're going to be blown away. Trust me, you will be blown away. very nice work, Marion. Okay, so I would like to start with your background, and if we can just talk about your early beginnings for a minute. Now, you started playing clarinet at age 8, and then at 15, after hearing some iconic saxophonists, you switched to the saxophone. So how was the transition for you, and is there some significance to you playing mostly soprano and tenor sax?
Well, in actuality, I wanted to play sax early on, and, saxophone was so popular that even in elementary school, it was hard to get my hands on one because everybody wanted to play the sax, but not so hard to get a clarinet because band teachers are always looking for clarinet players. And so I had to settle for a clarinet, so to speak. I said, I'll play clarinet for a couple of years and then I'll move on to saxophone. In fact, I ended up playing clarinet all the way until high school. So by the time I got to high school, I had embraced the instrument and, found a love for clarinet, which is, if you're a reed player, you realize that clarinet is a little more difficult instrument to capture than the saxophone. Saxophone is, although it's not an easier instrument, but it's a little bit more forgiving. And, so I think my affinity for clarinet for the soprano sax, comes from my years of playing clarinet, which are very similar voices and embouchures. And when I think of embouchure, that's when you place your mouth on the mouthpiece. But tenor sax being another B flat instrument, and soprano sax being B flat, for those who don't know, alto and baritone are in E flat. The transposing is similar, so therefore, improvisationally speaking, you're already in the same key of the instrument that you're playing in the reed family. So those kind of go hand in hand. But I've recently started playing a little bit more tenor sax, so it's starting to make a little comeback.
Okay. Now, I mentioned that at one point you wanted to be a veterinarian, and it was a trip that you took to Europe that kind of steered you into music. Tell us about that trip.
Well, in school, when I was about to graduate high school, I was really a fine student who played music. Music was more my hobby, although it was a little bit more than a hobby by most student standards. It was nonetheless a hobby of mine and something I enjoyed. I had not gotten to the point where you get that soul-searching spiritual experience that musicians eventually will have. You give them enough time. I guarantee you, and you can ask any musician, the day that happens, there's no turning back. And that happened for me when I was on a trip, which was just supposed to be a fun trip in Europe, the year I had graduated high school with some musicians, and it was for a school band. And that experience happened to me while I was in Italy. Again, I was already ready to go to college to start I wanted to be a zoo vet, and all my attention was on studying, biology and physics and calculus and so that I could prepare myself for college to go into my pre-med for veterinary medicine. But just shows you the power of art and music. I was smitten with that one experience, and I had a hard sell uphill, to tell my parents, to convince them that I wanted to go to music school because they had never heard me say that ever once, that I wanted to pursue music. And my mom was like, what? My dad said he saw it coming, and my mother was like, "Oh no, that's not gonna happen."
She wanted you to be a zoo vet.
Well, I think most parents are proud of whatever their child does, but mm-hmm. if they think it's a frivolous idea that maybe comes along just because maybe you play an instrument, and not only that, the uncertainty of being a musician to a parent is certainly overpowers the thought of them having security by being becoming a doctor, but my parents, I like to say that they were very, very worldly, and they were actually supportive. I talked to them and I said, look, I really feel strongly about this. And they knew that I was a half decent musician. So they supported me. And I have to say my parents were the leading force for me even going into music, because you got to face it, you have to have support, at home to head it, at least to go to music school, not necessarily be a musician.
Okay. Now, speaking of music school, you attended Berkeley and you met Norman Conners there. Tell us about that.
Well, while at Berkeley, we used to have two prestigious jazz clubs that were joined together. And one was called Paul's Mall, and next door was a place called the Jazz Workshop. And all the greatest names came through both of these places. On one side you would have very traditional jazz, and the other side you'd have a little bit more contemporary jazz. So you hear people like, as a matter of fact, in the early in the early days, in the late, in the early 70s, in the mid 70s, Earth, Wind & Fire would play at a small club like a Paul's Mall. And then on the other side, you'd have like Bobby Humphrey and Grover Washington. And then there would be like very heavyweights like Farrell Sanders and, you know, Norman Connors was the drummer for Farrell Sanders. I met Norman Connors playing drums for Farrell Sanders before Norman Connors even had You're My Starship out. So, but he talked about the fact that he was going to fuse jazz with R&B. And I said, well, you know, and he heard me play and he said, hey, man, you know, one day we're going to do something together. And lo and behold, we did. We ended up joining forces years later. By that time, Norman Connors was a household name. The songs like You're My Starship and This Is Your Life. And by the time I joined his camp, he was a very famous producer in his own right, very much in the style of like a Quincy Jones. So I was honored to be in that camp with Gene Karn, Phyllis Hyman, Michael Henderson, just to name a few.
Right, and I was going to say that working with Norman allowed you to share stages with some of the greatest groups and solo acts like that. How was that, how did that impress you at such a young age and time in your life?
Well, I was very impressed because this is the music I grew up on. I always cite that the generations that grew up with music in the 70s, and I mean, you know, I mean, certainly at my household, my dad was influencing me with a lot of jazz because he was a big, you know, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, you know, Sarah Vaughan, Billie Holiday. I mean, I had a lot of that music going on in my house. Maybe I didn't understand what it was, but I appreciated it. And across the hall from my dad lived my sister, who played BT Express and Ohio Players and you know, Tavares and OJs and Aretha Franklin and Chaka Khan. So, I mean, it was pretty amazing that I was now found myself, you know, working with, you know, Norman Connors and, you know, Gene Karn, you know. I mean, that was like these are like idols, you know. I mean, forget about it.
Definitely.
Now, with the wide range of artists that you've worked with over the years, and like right now I think you're like 12 cities deep in, how have you evolved over the years with your not only your playing style but also adapting to the changing landscape of the music business right now?
Well, you know, I've always kept
things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kept a focus on originality, but at the same time, you know, you have to be a businessman also. You have to wear a business hat. I mean, let's face it, you're not going to make it in any business unless you wear a business hat. You can't just go on your laureates as a musician. Along with being a musician is the entertainment portion of that. Entertainer, you know, entertainer, businessman, a visionary. I would say that that's the formula for most successful musicians who eventually would see that their careers are really particularly, you know, and eventually guided by themselves. And, you know, their vision is what enables them to be who they are. And so I would have a lot of respect for all of the artists that would come along, you know, during my time, before and after, by embracing the history of music and the future of music. I always tell, you know, the young students today, if you don't have a vision of the past history of music, then you will have a very distorted view of the future of music. Because what I'm talking about in America is real music that was created here, propagated here, and nurtures here, and lives here, and will always be here. Don't ever get it twisted, because if you don't have a history, if you don't dig down into the treasure chest of American music history, and I'm not just talking about jazz, I'm talking about folk Celtic music that became country music. I'm talking about, the blues. I'm talking about slavery. I'm talking about Bunk Johnson. I'm talking about Kid Ory and Jelly Roll Morton and Paul Whiteman. And I'm talking about the real history of music. If you don't go in search of that, then you have done yourself a huge injustice. So my vision of music has always been a broad stroke vision, and one that's always kept my eye on what has happened and what the anticipation of what will happen, with no expectations, because that's what art and music is all about.
Wow. Preach that, Mr. Meadows. Wow. That was good. All right. I have a phone call. Let me take the call. Area code 248. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. This is Jazzy.
How are you?
I'm great.
I'm sorry, what's your name?
Janetta.
Janetta. Jazzy, nice to meet you, Janetta. Meet Marion.
Hello. Hi, Janetta.
Hi, this is a thrill. This is a thrill. I love everything you do.
Oh, well, thank you, Janetta.
Fabulous. I have kind of an off-the-wall question in a way, and it may not be one of them. What made you decide to live in Hawaii?
Well, mainly because I had a daughter that was growing up in Hawaii with her mom. And and I was in Hawaii already many times, mm-hmm. and so it just got to be super expensive to keep flying back and to see my daughter all the time, and I was like, but it's also super expensive to buy a place in Hawaii, so especially in Maui where my daughter lived, so I just decided that I was gonna I just said, well, I gotta find a way of moving to Hawaii and figuring out how to get there. And I just got lucky and I said I'm gonna sell my house in Phoenix. I'm gonna make a commitment to my daughter. It's her last 4 years of high school, and I'm gonna be there for her. That's all romantic and everything. But then I got to Hawaii, and the place I lived was so beautiful. I go, I should have done this years ago. because the place that I live in is just so amazing. I mean, it's just absolutely amazing. And, as life will have it, that moving closer to my daughter was actually a dream come true for me, because I was ready to have a place where I can come out of my door and look down 5,000 feet to the ocean, it's been really, really nice.
Needless to say, I bet that does something for your creativity.
Oh, no doubt, because I've always been a nature person. I've always been an outdoors person, and that just added to, what I thought, when you go to a place where the wind blows fresh every day, there's a fresh breeze, and you look around, and all this nature around you, and plumerias and birds of paradise and the ocean, so green. I mean, it truly is a paradise. And I don't say that in a patronizing way. I mean seriously, I come out of my house some days and I go, this is unbelievable. I mean, this is really amazing that this even exists. So. It's like that.
Beautiful.
Wow, great.
Well, I kind of thought you'd say that. And I had one other question. I was just wondering, because to me, your music is always fresh. Even when I hear Suede over and over again, it's just always fresh to me. And I was wondering what do you do? I mean, do you go into a zone? Because you don't sound like anybody else, even though there's a lot of sax players out there, and a lot of them have their own unique sound. But I was wondering, how do you make yourself so unique, such that when I hear you play, I know that's you, as opposed to somebody else? How do you keep your uniqueness?
Well, I like to say that I actually had a mentor along the way who did guide me in the right direction. Now, the rest of it is a mystery, but I can attribute part of it to the fact that I never really care about what a jazz chart is. I hardly ever even pay attention to them. People go, you're number two on the chart, or you're one on the chart, or you're seven on the chart. I've actually, believe it or not, never paid attention to any of those things.
Okay.
What I've paid more attention to is the fact that it took me almost 4 years to make this record because it just wasn't time for me to make it. And I spent a year and a half ago, getting ready to start to make a record that I actually, when I decided that I was going to make it, only took me maybe 2 months to do. So,
wow.
So it's a feeling, and it's it's kind of like I don't take the business side of the music so seriously in terms of making the record. I take the music the most serious.
Okay.
So Grover Washington, during that time I was in Boston, had come to town a couple of days early, and Bobby Humphrey I had just met. Bobby Humphrey was sick with the flu, and again, I would hang out at that club, and this particular time it was at Paul's Mall, and she let me sit in with her, and she goes, listen, she goes, and trust me, I knew Bobby Humphrey, she's, you know, I was idolized her, and she says, look, I need you to come down and play every night, because I got to keep this gig, because I have the flu. I want you to come and play with me every night. So, Bobby, I'll come.
Wow.
If you need me to come and play, I'll come and play. I just wanted to play, obviously. I'm just a college student.
Wow.
So Grover is sitting in the audience one night. He's in town early for his show next door.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes up to me. I mean, you got to understand, I'm a saxophone player. This is Grover Washington walking up to me.
Oh, my
saying,
God.
He's like, Meadows. He goes, you have a unique sound. And he says, brother, you got your own sound already.
What?
And I was playing some Grover licks then. Trust me. I was playing some Grover licks.
Okay.
And he goes, you don't need to play any of my licks anymore.
Oh, wow.
He says, because you have a sound. And he goes, and if you stay true to that sound, you will be who you need to be. And that's what he told me. And this is after he invited me to his hotel room the next day. I thought he was inviting me for a lesson.
Oh, my gosh.
But he just was giving me a verbal lesson. I never even took my horn out. He was just, schooling me on what I had. And I took that to heart. Hopefully that has translated into what you're saying, and if you feel that way, that it's been fresh for you, then you're making my heart. I'm very blessed to be able to hear you say that.
That's
great.
You are very blessed to get those opportunities, and yes, your music is fresh. Even though I have some favorites that I play over and over again, but it's like I've never heard them before. So I mean, you've done it. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you so much.
We're going to get into some music on this new CD, Whisper, Janetta. So thank you for giving us a call.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Janetta.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Marion.
All right, Marion, tell us about Whisper.
Well, you know, I was kind of alluding to the fact that I was trying to record this record it was about a year and a half that I committed to it, that I was going to get it done. But I just couldn't get it done because artistically, it didn't kick in yet. And I was waiting for it to kick in. It hadn't kicked in yet. I called my manager, Dave, Dave said, come on out to Ohio and let's sit down and listen to some music and listen to some cats and just spend some time together. So I actually went out to his house in Ohio. And Dave and I have been together for many years because Dave Love used to be the president of the label, Heads Up. And he was the guy that signed me with records like Players Club and In Deep and, Secrets and all those records. So nobody knows me more than Dave. And then he says, well, I got this cat, Carlo Panisi, who used to do some producing for Nesta Torres. And I go, yeah, I remember that Nesta record. So we put the Nesta record on, and we sat down, and I was going like, man, I love this cat's stuff. And Carlo Panisi, I don't know Carlo Panisi. Now, you fast forward about 3 weeks later, I'm in Carlo Panisi's house recording with this guy, and in 1 month's time, my record was done. But in the meantime, I had worked with Bob Baldwin, my good friend. I had done some wonderful tracks. I just didn't have the glue for the record yet. I had worked with Ronnie Solm, world-famous producer, who produced Freddie Jackson, Najee, Alex Bouillon. These are good friends of mine. Bob Baldwin, of course, his you know Will Downing, and he and I, all three of us collaborated back on Come Back to Me, the Janet Jackson song. And then I also worked with my young cohort from Arizona, Michael Brony. So with that team and Carlo putting the glue on it, I went and wrote six or seven more songs with Carlo. And when I left there, I had a record. It was done, and it felt right. And that's just kind of like Charlie Daniels handing the kid back the violin in the restaurant. That's how you do it, son. So.
Now, I'm going to say that before we get into the music. Now, you also used Althea, Renee, and Reagan Whiteside on this. How did you, both those young ladies are two great flute players. Now, why did you use both of them when you just probably need one flute? I mean.
Well, because, as much as I love my colleagues in the business, I've had an opportunity to record and play with all those guys, and those guys are all superstars, already. I felt it was more important for me to showcase some talent that needs to be heard. And Althea, yeah, she's making a name for herself now. Reagan Whiteside, she's a new up and coming flautist. So to me, that's kind of more important for me to showcase. And it didn't really matter that they both played the same instrument. What mattered more to me is the fact that they were two bad chicks that could play and good friends of mine and two great songs. Now, quiet as is kept, Althea and I had recorded that song a while back, and we had just never released it. So I called her up. I said, let's rework that song and put that out on my new record, and she was all for it because Althea is just a very, very dear friend of mine, and we've been close to each other for many years now, from way back in her Detroit days. So it was great to have her on board. Bob Baldwin had turned me on to Reagan Whiteside, his engineer, and Reagan, they were a team, and they turned me on to her, and then, started writing this great song. I said, let me get in on this and let's see what we got. And so Bottoms Up was the end result of that. So that's how she came on board.
Well, let's start with Bottoms Up then. We'll start with that. We're talking to saxophonist Marion Meadows. His new CD is called Whisper. You can find it on his website, marionmeadows.com. Definitely go over there and check that out. Give us a call at 646-716-5485. This is Bottoms Up from the new CD, Whisper. That was Bottoms Up from Mary Meadows' new CD, Whisper, and that's featuring Reagan Whiteside on flute. Very nice, Marion.
Oh, thanks, Terry.
Now, you have played with or collaborated with some really, great artists, and I want to ask you about two of them. First, Eartha Kitt. Tell me about this, how you hooked up with her.
Well, Eartha was she was doing a play in Florida at Burt Reynolds Theater, and my friend Brian Keene was the musical director for that play, which had a live pit band, and they hired me to do. They had some special stuff they wanted to do with the saxophone and stuff, and they hired me to be a part of the show. So in essence, I was really just in the pit band. But Eartha is she's just one of those kind of people that she wants to surround herself with the musicians and the actors, and it's so funny because ironically enough, Candy Alexander, who's the girl who plays in CSI and mm-hmm. The Wire. I mean, she did a lot of those shows like that, and now became a very famous actress. Was a dancer in that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was. She was at that time. Candy wasn't even acting. She was just a dancer. She was one of the dancers, and it was just great to be a part of that. But as I got to know Eartha, she's one of those kind of people that she likes to tell you what's going on, and she would tell about her whole life story about it. She was blacklisted, during the Lady Bird Johnson days. How she moved to Europe, very much the same story as Josephine Baker. She, she learned how to speak fluent French, and she was blacklisted here in this country. She said the next day, no one would hire her, and no club would give her a job. So she had to pretty much leave the United States because they blacklisted her, and it was very real back in those days. But as I got to know her, I heard incredible stories about the people that she was around as she was growing up, and I can write a book about my conversations with Eartha Kitt. Trust me when I tell you.
Wow. Okay, and the other one I want to ask you about is Brooke Benton. He sings my all-time favorite song, "Rainy Night in Georgia." How did you hook up with him?
Well, there was a guy that was producing Brooke at the time, and I'm trying to recall who the producer of that session was, and it escapes me right now. But I was just called to come in and do a sax solo on a Brooke Benton song, and it was the only time that I got a chance to meet Brooke. I never got a chance to do any shows with him. But I have to say, it was another person I was just in awe of because, if you grew up listening to "Rainy Night in Georgia,"
mm-hmm.
in a million years would you ever think you're going to record with that person? And here I was. This is certainly a record my dad had, and here I was in the studio recording with Brooke Benton. So, needless to say, it was an amazing experience and one that I'll never forget.
Oh, I absolutely love that song, and Nick Colleone covered it and did a great job on it. That's my all-time favorite.
He does a great live version of it, too.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. I want to ask you about your first solo project for Lovers Only. How do you feel that you evolved as an artist 23 years after that CD? Or probably album at that point.
Well, I've grown. I've grown as an artist just simply because I think if you start out in the musical time that I did, that you can't help but grow. I mean, mm-hmm. it's inevitable that you're going to be around those kinds of people and not evolve, because I had the facility as a musician to evolve as a musician, but I grew as a man, as a musician, my world vision was expanded, and everything about me grew, musically, artistically, spiritually I grew. And so I couldn't just say that one thing grew, that I got better as a musician. Certainly I did. But because I was around so much art and so much fascination and so much fantasy and so much reality and so much ingenious, there was so much around me that I was just in awe of even being a part of it, never mind thinking that I was making a contribution.
Okay. Now, on the CD Whisper, you have two classics on here, Freddie Hubbard's Skydive and Dave Grusin's, how do you pronounce that, Marcos Sinho?
Yeah, Marcosino.
Marcosino, okay. How did you come by selecting those two songs?
Well, I think my eclectic side of me ventures off into places that, you know, a lot of musicians don't. And I'm not saying, you know, we all don't have that gene, but for me, it goes in those directions. I'm a big Latin music fan. I'm a huge Freddie Hubbard fan, and I'm a huge Dave Valentine fan. And Marcosino was one of those songs that he did that I saw him play live before I heard it on a recording. And I always said that whenever I had a chance, I was going to record that song. And I did finally. So, not much to say about it except that I've always wanted to record it. And years later, Dave Valentine and I got in a band together in New York City called the Fantasy Band with Chuck Loeb and John Lee and Lionel Cordue. From time to time, and George Genda was one of the guys from Special Effects who actually was one of the founders of that band. And it was just wonderful to be in a band with Dave Valentine, number one, but such a wonderful blessing to be able to record that song by him this time around. The Freddie Hubbard song, Skydive, I actually recorded two. I recorded Red Clay, which didn't make the record this time, and Bob Baldwin produced both of them, and Joey Somerville on trumpet, Lil John Roberts on drums. Just what can I say about Skydive? That's a classic CTI Creed Taylor, you know, classic, and I'm just surprised that no one has done it before me, because all along the way, I wanted to do Anniversary by Tony.
Well, that would have been nice.
But Gerald Albright did it.
Yes.
and I wanted to do Here and Now, and I think Grover did it by Luther or somebody. But every time I wanted to do a great classic, you know, somebody had already recorded or just beat me to the punch. So I think I beat everybody else to the punch on these two.
Now, is that something that musicians do? You know, if someone else has recorded a song, then you won't record it?
Typically not, especially if it's a colleague. If Kirk Whalen has done it or Gerald has done it, these are my colleagues. And, you know, if any of those guys do the song, they're going to do it so well, there's no way I'm going to touch it because that's the respect I have for them as artists. Because I don't, first of all, for me, it's a gray area to even do a cover song. But gray meaning that if you're going to do it, commit to the cover, that you're going to bring something, you know, fresh to that song because it was done so well before. I have to say for, you know, guys like Gerald Albright or Kirk Whalen or any of those guys, you know, even Boney, who do covers, they do them so well that I'm not going to touch them.
Okay.
But that's just out of respect for my colleagues for the most part. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. All right. The next song I'm going to play is Skydive. And then after this, Marion, I want to talk about the other creative Marion, your photography and your graphic artist design, and definitely that atmosphere site for sure.
Sure.
All right, so
okay.
Okay, thanks. So this is Skydive from the new CD, Whisper.
Thank you.
That was another song off of Marian Meadows' new CD, Whisper. Marian, so I want to ask you about the Sax in the City project that you have with Hulk Taylor and now a young saxophonist in Vincent and Gallo. How is that formed and how is that going?
Oh, yes. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. Let me hide my keyboard so I don't hit it with my ear. Anyway, Sax in the City was a vision I had originally for myself and Kennedy Dolfer with Paul Taylor and Mindy Hebert. And then eventually we brought Jesse J into the band last year, and we had a great run with myself, Paul Taylor, and Jesse J. And then this year we decided that we were going to bring on Vincent and Gallo, so we're kind of like Sax in the City, the guys from the guys' view. and Vincent is, I've been watching Vincent grow as a musician from Connecticut. So I'm from Connecticut, and he's from Connecticut, so I've been kind of watching him up and coming, and I was very excited when his latest record came out. He joined us in late last season when Jesse went out with Lionel Richie. I invited Vincent to come on board with Sax in the City, and we enjoyed his performance so much that we invited him back this year. So that's the new show. And I got to say, it's just phenomenal because, you know, Paul Taylor's full of energy. Vincent and Gallo, forget about it. He's got more energy than both of us put together. And it's just a lot of fun. The music is killing, though. I mean, because, you know, Vincent grew up in a lot of old school music because his dad was a DJ. So for a young cat, you know, everybody thinks he's like this young poppy sax player, but this guy's got some deep, deep roots. And for a guy who's only 20 years old, he knows a lot of music. So needless to say, Sax in the City this year is a pretty hot group.
I was really happy to see that you included him in that. So that's great. I was really happy to see that.
because, like, you know, me and Terry, we talk about a lot of the, you know, more experienced artists, I won't say older, but more experienced artists, kind of reaching back and, you know, kind of bringing along some of the new young generation cats that are coming out now, because that'll help them, you know, a lot in order, you know, to kind of build themselves and their brand and their fan base as well, you know, and help keep the genre alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's important, and not only is it important, it's our call to duty to, if we were serious about keeping our music alive, and, you know, then we would be serious about helping the new young guys to come along. And there are a lot of great new young players. The most immediate ones that I work with are, you know, Jakeem Joyner and Marcus Anderson and Elon Trotman and of course Vincent, but you know, Lynn Roundtree, all these new guys that are coming around. But you know what? You know, I just love watching these cats because it reminds me of when I was young, and takes me back to my story about when I met Grover Washington. I mean, because these are the days and the moments that help us move on into our next generation of players, and the previous generation of guys who help us will always be remembered. So that's why it's important for us to help the new young cats. It goes hand in hand. So I'm very excited to have Vincent on, and I've recently been talking to Elon. He and I have got something working possibly for the next year or two, so you never know.
Oh, wow. Happy to hear that. So now I wanted to talk about the other creative side of Marian Meadows. He has these layers of creativity, the photographer side and the graphic artist side. And please tell me about Atmosphere, A World of Fantasy. That is, I saw that and I was blown away. What is that about?
Well, you know, I've been a graphic artist for, or digital artist, I should say, because that's Atmosphere is more my digital art, for a long time. And I dabbled in Photoshop and Illustrator and all those kinds of things, just as a hobby. But out of need to fix my websites and stuff, I decided to try to, I went to school to learn how to do websites. And, you know, of course, part of making websites is graphic design. And I found a whole new world by being an artist. I had found a new canvas, and that canvas was photography slash digital art. And I'll sometimes take the picture myself or manipulate photos, a lot of vectors. I do a lot of different things to come up with the stuff that I come up with. But I'm really all off into that. I like to say I go out clubbing and doing a lot of, you know, dating and stuff, but I don't. I'm always behind the computer. I'm always working late at night like a mad scientist coming up with some some wild fantasy picture. But Marian Mills Atmospheres is the place where you can go find. That's MarianMills.com can lead you to those places. But I also have Marian Mills Design, and of which I did recently, Marian Mills Design, we did Steve Oliver's new album cover, actually his last two album covers, and the new cover coming out by Cal Harris Jr. So, and I'm getting ready to do DJ Jonathan's new cover, record cover. So, so, and some websites. So,
and Chip Sharon just hit me up on Skype saying that you did some work for him.
Oh, well, Chip Sharon's my bass player. We've been together for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've just done his EPK and his new album cover, but he and I've been together for 20 years, so needless to say, I was going to do his artwork for him, and he tells me he's going to be a guest on the show coming up soon, and I was excited to hear about that.
Yeah.
As much as I'm excited that he has a new career coming for himself with his new CD coming out, and that's how it all works, because, you know, we all do this together to move on to the next thing that we do in life. And I'm happy to hear Chip is stepping out and doing his own thing.
Yes, I'm looking forward to having him on. I have a couple of phone calls, so let's take those. I'm starting with area code 865. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Terry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Terry.
Hi, what's your name?
This is Althea.
Oh, hi, Althea. Althea Renee?
No.
Oh, okay. I can hope.
Although we've been confused on occasion. I wasn't expecting to be singled out to speak.
I'm sorry. You were just listening.
Okay,
no problem.
I will say hello to Marian.
Hello. Hi, Althea. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. 865. Where is that coming from?
It's actually coming from the D.C. area. That's just an old Tennessee number I have.
Never. Oh, okay.
That's East Tennessee.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Welcome.
All right. Did you have a question for Marian?
I just want to let him know I love his music and I love him as well. I had the pleasure of meeting him on a cruise.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I enjoy your music. Love.
Thank you, Althea. Thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, and I'll put you back on mute so you can continue to listen.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. All right. The next caller, area code 719. Welcome to Talking Smooth Jazz.
Hi, Terry. Tony Eccles.
Okay, hi Tony, how are you?
I'm great, how you doing?
I'm good. Okay, so we're laughing because every time Tony calls in, I never recognize his phone number, ever.
What's up with that?
Meet Marian, Tony, I'm sorry. Meet Marian.
Hey, Marian.
Hey, Tony,
how
are you? Good,
I'm
good, good. Now, where are you calling from, Tony?
I'm calling from Colorado, man. Colorado Springs.
Oh, Colorado. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Mary and I have met a couple times the last couple of years. I actually opened up for you and Brian Simpson a few years back out here, if you remember. A cat named Andre that booked you.
Oh, yeah, sure. I remember that. Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
But I'm calling because I know I ran into you briefly at a couple of jazz festivals. We never really had a chance to talk a whole lot, but you were mentioning just a few minutes ago about some of the newer cats that are coming up, you know, like my buddy Marcus and Elon and Lynn Roundtree, you know, Julian Vaughn, Nicholas Cole, people like that that are kind of like part of that new generation, including myself. And as a saxophonist, I wanted to ask you, all of us are indie artists, and, you know, there's things that we have to do to be successful in this business and to get ourselves out there the right way that you don't necessarily have to do when you're signed to a label or you have an established career such as yourself, you know, with 13 albums, which is a major accomplishment, you know. In genre, I think. What would you say, you know, I just want to get into your perspective, as an indie artist who's, I'm becoming national, but I'm still up and coming, what should I do a little bit stronger, you know, in your mind, just to really get over that hump? Because sometimes I feel like I'm right at the top of that hill, but my hand keeps slipping down, you know.
Well, you know, I understand your question, and I understand your pain. One of the guys that I would say I use as an example is Vincent Ngala, because Vincent is an indie artist who's now made it to the top of the charts. He's forged a little niche for himself in the market. And Marcus Anderson, you know, has done the same thing. You know, I think aside from the part of the music business that's the luck part, you know, I always call it the luck part, and I would say I say that in facetiously. But at the same time, there is a part of the entertainment business that being in the right place at the right time. But having said that, you kind of hit it on the head when you said, you know, being an indie artist today, because, you know, kind of basically we're all indie artists now, even the veteran artists. We're going into a time when there aren't going to be any more record companies left. In the next few years, there won't even be record companies for jazz artists. Every company that will exist in the future for jazz artists will be independent. So you're already in the right time and at the right place, because as the music industry changes, you're poised as an up-and-coming artist to kind of write your destiny. And you know what those tools are. I don't need to tell you. I mean, you know how these guys are doing it, making their records, you know, honing their craft, connecting with musicians such as myself, and not being afraid to ask for, like, what can I do to get to the next level? You know, can I sit in on a gig? You know, those sorts of things. You already know what those tools are. So my advice at this point is, and also, I'm happy to say that you're in a good place at a good time, just like I was in the early 90s when the contemporary jazz scene was taking off. You know, Najee already had two records out, and Najee was a friend of mine, and I was like, man, I'm already way behind the game. So, I was just like you. I was going, how can I do that? Well, I did do that, and I found out what I needed to do that at that particular time. So, you know, you're gonna have to find out what it's gonna take for you, but the main thing is the perseverance. You gotta keep going. I was working with Norman Connors at the time. I pretty much had to quit my job so I can get my tape done, because we were still making tape back then. And like kinda in Boogie Nights, I had to get the tapes over to the record company so we can get the record deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It really is about that. And I think I hear in your voice that you're already on that path. You know, I don't think success by the jazz standard is going to be measured in terms of the popularity as opposed to the content and who the adult listener. And I'm not saying that every jazz artist is only listened to by adults. What I'm saying is I should rephrase that to the more, you know, to the more attentive, mature listener, the person who is listening for something that's different. And I think there's a lot of that audience out there. They're going to always be there. And as even young listeners grow and evolve, they start looking for something a little bit more serious in terms of the content. So you're going to have to create your own social network, your own embody your own fan base. And brother, this is the best time in the world to do that because it's out there for you. So keep plugging at it and keep reaching out to cats like myself because we're here to help you.
You know, and I'm glad you said that because just real quick, I had a conversation with Gerald the other day because, you know, he lives out here in Colorado and I ran into him. So we had a little brief conversation about the same thing. And, you know, he gave me some of the same encouragement. And I've definitely done that. I mean, anybody knows me, I'm constantly on social networking and I've used that to reach out to a lot of people. And it's always one of the best ways to keep yourself out there, known and consistent. And, you know, when I met you or when we talked, then I was you because I was doing a gig or kind of on the road just someplace close by or, you know, I think one time we were on the same festival. Like, I didn't get a chance to talk to you in Norfolk, Virginia this past summer, but you and I were there with Brian Lanier and Kim Waters and, you know, some really great people. So, you know, I just wanted to hear from your perspective to see if it was the same, you know, what I've been told from other cats, and you've given me some consistent advice, man, so I really appreciate that. And I just want to thank you, too, man, for all the years of music. You know, we both have an affinity for the soprano. Yeah, we both have an affinity for the soprano saxophone, and so, you know, I definitely did listen to you. I remember serenading this girl in high school to your version of Come Back to Me by Janet Jackson.
Oh, wow, yeah, that's what I'm glad we were talking about that earlier with Will Downing.
Right, that was one of my favorites by you. And just real quick, I also want to let you know too, man. I enjoy your tenor sound as well, man. I hope to hear more of that.
Thanks, Tony. I appreciate
it. No problem, bro.
And trust me, we have you guys on our radar. Trust me when I tell you, it's like, you know, when you guys are coming up, we have you on our radar for all the right reasons too. And you know, just keep doing what you're doing, brother. I mean, and we're blessed to. We're blessed to even do this to be, you know, anointed to play instruments. First of all, just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it's a beautiful experience, no matter how you slice it or dice it. So, we always have your back out here, man. No problem.
I appreciate that, man. So, you know, continued success to you, man, and hopefully I'll run into you really soon.
No doubt. Okay. Thanks, right. Tony.
No problem. Thanks, Terry. Talk to you guys soon.
Bye, Tony. Thank you.
Bye. No problem.
All right, Marion, I just have a couple of more questions, if you don't mind. You are a semi-pro cyclist, and I read that you went to Europe in 2003 to see Lance Armstrong win his fifth Tour de France race.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
What do you think of this, of the doping issue around him and the future of the sport?
Well, you know, when I was racing racing that year myself, and you were in Europe, you found out that the climate for professional bike racing was pretty much built around the Europeans being, you know, into the doping thing. But see, they all knew that. Americans were a little naive. We just thought, and people propped Lance up, and I knew Lance. I've ridden with Lance four times, you know, and I mean, I'm not going to say he was a personal friend of mine, but his roommate was my coach. So in 2003, and when we raced again in 2005, I mean, I knew all the bike racers doped. So if I knew, and I'm just, you know, I'm a semi-pro amateur guy, you know, and if I knew, and then certainly the coaches knew, the sport knew. I mean, I'm telling you, I already knew that. So for all these people to come out and say that they're shocked that they heard that this was going on, well, it's, you know, if you're a biker, then you know that it's always been going on. The Europeans have been doing it for years. And you basically didn't race in the Tour de France unless you had to take something because it's almost inhuman to even race that far, that long. So, Lance picked some people off and he made some people mad. But the bottom line is that the people in the sport and the sponsors, you know, who go, oh, I didn't know, they all knew. Of course they knew, because I knew.
Wow.
If you're going to tell me that Nike didn't know, then I'm going to tell you that, you know, I'm really the president of the United States. You know what I'm trying to say? So when it comes to stuff like that, I don't put a whole lot of credence into America because, you know, this is the same climate that Tiger Woods got up and apologized to America. Tiger Woods didn't need to apologize to America. Tiger Woods just needs to apologize to his wife and his mom and their family. America, he didn't owe America anything. And as far as his private life is concerned, that had nothing to do with apologizing to America. So Lance Armstrong didn't apologize to America, so to speak. He apologized for the fact that he actually got busted. And that was it. And they took his titles away. But, you know, Tiger Woods got up there apologizing like, you know, like he really had done something wrong. He had infidelity and, you know, okay. So, you know, a lot of, I mean, probably half of the golfing community, is, you know, had some groupie chick before. But see, those are the things that I just can't buy into because I can't buy into the fake part of the world when people put these facades up with all these expectations of stuff that most people don't even live up to themselves. So, you know. As far as Lance is concerned, I got no problems with Lance Armstrong. What America and the rest of the world has a problem with is Lance was an arrogant, very powerful, very at the same time, he was a very charismatic, and he was still, much to his credit, a superhuman athlete. So that's really basically all I got to say about it because there's always going to be some sort of enhancing and doping because as long as people want athletes to perform at these high levels, yeah, that's what they're going to do. They get paid millions of dollars. And probably if any of us were in those situations, we'd have to think twice about not doing it or doing it our own self. So basically, that's about what I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, thank you. I just wanted to know as a cyclist, you know, what your thoughts were on that because it was such a big deal. And, you know, he denied it for so long. And I was like, okay, well, let me ask Marion. He's a semi-pro cyclist, and he's been there.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, thank you.
He basically just kind of messed up. That's all.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. A lot of fans are appreciative of social media sites like Facebook and Twitter, and that gives them access to some of their favorite artists. Because of those outlets, they feel that they know artists more than ever before, and it kind of closes the gap between fan and artist. Jazz artists in particular are very down-to-earth and, for the most part, approachable after shows, especially when the venue is smaller, you know, more intimate setting or at festivals. Yeah. However, there are still some that appear to have standoffish attitudes toward the fans. So what is your take on that, and how do you embrace your fans when you are approached by them, and what tips can you offer other artists who shun their fans, especially the young artists that are coming up now, especially them?
Yeah, I think there's a protocol that goes along with the way you interact with your fans, and you know that goes hand in hand with the way that you act yourself. You hold yourself because let's face it, your fans are looking at you with admiration, and they're also looking at you with the fact that wow, I'm able to approach this artist, and they're down to earth. And they can reciprocate that back. You know, as long as you don't abuse that privilege and that rapport that you have with your fans, why not? Because I think that that's a wonderful thing that jazz artists have embraced, that we now, you know, we do these cruises, we get up close and personal after our shows, we do these autograph signings, we hug our fans, we take pictures with our fans, we communicate with them on Facebook and Twitter, and why not? Because you know what? It's not that serious. You know, it's about sharing the love, and we need to break down some of the barriers of the mystique that somebody is particularly more. There's a mystique about this person that you don't possess, and I don't feel that's true at all. I think that we are all in the same boat together, and it's wonderful that we share the things and the gifts that we have. And for us as musicians, that gift is to play music, and some people have the gift of enjoying music and being able to recognize and their musicality. Sets them apart from the mere mortals because they know so much music. So, you know, and it becomes such a part of their lives. So, and we become a part of each other's lives. I think it's all for the better. I think it's giving the world a better chance at a utopia by which we could all live and not really be worrying about anything other than something beautiful and about love. And I'm all for the fact that when I was in Dubai 2 years ago, a gentleman came up to me from Lebanon, and he said, you know what? There are people here from all over the world, and nobody's thinking about fighting or dropping a bomb. They're just here for the music. He goes, so this might be the last utopia left for mankind is art and music, because God knows that only the rest of the world is all screwed up with all these other crazy stuff that's going on and still trying to figure out if we, if we're doing the right things or not. But, you know, we always know we're doing the right thing. We all get together, sit down on a blanket, and get our picnic basket, and we watch a concert. We all know we're doing the right thing. So.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I said that was the last question, but we need to find out where you're going to be. If you're hitting the road on tour, Jazzy J wants to know if you're coming to Detroit. And I know that you're going to be here in Vegas. So let us know what's going on. Where are you going to be? Where can we come and see you?
Okay, well, we're going to be all – we are in Vegas. We've just booked a show in Detroit. I'm not exactly where that's going to be, but we are now in the process. The agency has us going all over the country now this summer with Vincent, with my own band. I'm going to be joining Nick Colleone in Chicago. I'm going to be doing some stuff with Vernon Barbary now, I heard, in Denver as of today. So – got a lot of exciting stuff going on. Paul Taylor and I, of course, will be out with Sax in the City with Vincent and Gala. And just go to marionmetals.com and try to keep up with this if you can.
Yeah,
I think you're going to be on the you guys are going to be on the Capital Jazz Cruise, I think, Capital Jazz Fest.
I am not going to be on it this year. I was on it a year before last, but Cliff always looks out for me. So, Cliff Hunt, who does Capital Jazz, he always looks out for me. So, I'm sure I'm going to show up on one of his shows sooner or later because I always have. So.
Okay. All right. Well, he's going to be here in Vegas at the Las Vegas Soul Festival, and that's going to be at the Thomas & Mack Center April 6th and 7th. So if you're in the area, definitely pick up a ticket, support the artist, buy a ticket to their shows, and check Marion out. Come and see him. Unfortunately, Marion, I will be in Seattle that weekend, so I will not be here to see you.
Okay. Well, we'll see you next time, Carrie.
Yes, definitely. Mike, do you have any more questions? I know I kept saying the last question.
No, I'm out.
But,
I'm out.
Okay.
No.
Well, Marion, thank you so much. We've kept you 15 minutes over, but I really appreciate your time.
Oh, it's quite all right. I love you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Look up my good buddy Chip Sheeran on his show. You're coming up on your show soon.
Next Tuesday on the 19th, he will be on. Yes. Yeah. Definitely.
Wonderful.
All right.
Thank you, Terry. Okay. Thank you, Michael.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Looks like you soon.
All right. That was saxophonist Marion Metals. His brand new CD is called Whisper. You can find that on his website, marionmetals.com. And definitely check out the other creative side of Marion by going to marionmetalsatmospheres.com and marionmetalsphotography.com. Check that out. Beautiful stuff on his website. Just beautiful, beautiful artwork, photography, his digital designs, and that atmosphere, that is just really, really nice. So you want to check that out. So I am going to play a couple of more songs from the CD. We have a few minutes, and I do want to play a couple of more songs. One of my favorites is the first track. It's called The Visitor, so that's what I'm going to play next.
Thank you.
right. That was one of my favorite tracks on the new CD, Whisper. That was called The Visitor. I liked that so much. And I was telling Marion before the show that I have a whole new level of respect for him just based on all of the research that I've done and all of the information that I found out about him. Plus, I like this CD a lot. So I'm hoping that you guys will definitely check this out. It's called Whisper, and it is on his website, marionmetals.com. And as I said in my intro of him, not only is he a musician, but he's very creative in photography, digital design. He created his website, which is really, really nice. And then that Atmosphere site is just, that thing is wild. That thing is just wild, but it's beautiful, just beautiful work he does. So definitely give this CD a listen to. I think you are going to like it. I'm going to play another song before we end the show. But, Mike, I just wanted to know if there's anything going on in the D.C. area you want to share.
Well, your favorite artist will be here in April. Brian Culberson will be at the Birchmere in April. I think it's April the 15th. Look, don't get me saying the wrong date. Somebody done went and seen the wrong act. But he's going to be in mid-April. Boney James is going to be here the week after. So I look forward to seeing my good buddy Curl at the show. I know she's always going to be at a Boney show, so, you know, I'm down to see that show. But those two gentlemen will be here. Najee will also be here at the Birchmere as well. So, of course, my girl Cheryl should come up and see that one with me. There's going to be some half shows, like, because the sun is out now. The time has gone up. We got a little more light now, so we can kind of get down and boogie with the sunlight, you know.
That's right.
And then the heat's coming back. It's not as good as his Vegas with 83-degree temperatures, but, we're getting there.
If it could just stay this. We have the triple digits to look forward to, and I am not looking forward to that, for sure. But, right now it's very nice and it's comfortable. Very comfortable right now. All right, so let me thank everyone in the chat room. Kathy Victoria, that is Irvin Pope's sister, the guy with the million-dollar smile. Welcome, and thank you for tuning in, Kathy, Cheryl, Carol, Jazzy J, Catherine Gilran, Jazzy Chick was in the room as well, and all of the guests. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening to Talking Smooth Jazz. If you are listening to an archive show, if you download the show from iTunes and are listening, thank you for doing that as well. I'm going to close the show with the first single that was released from Whisper. It's called Black Pearl. You've been listening to Talking Smooth Jazz with your host, the Jazz Queen.
And Mike Reynolds.
And we look forward to talking smooth jazz with you again next time. Thank you again, and have a good evening. Okay, the music is buffering.
See?
It don't want to play.
Technology. We can't live without it.
I know. There we go.
thank you for listening to Talking Smooth Jazz. Please visit our websites, TalkingSmoothJazz.com and Mastermind-Entertainment.com. Join our Facebook fan and group pages and follow us on Twitter at Jazz_Queen and The Daily Grind. That's THA Daily Grind.